Good afternoon and welcome to The Outspoken Cyclist, your weekly radio connection to bicycles and cycling, as well as fitness and other related topics. The Outspoken Cyclist is a radio show produced by cyclists for cyclists. And now here's your host, the Outspoken Cyclist herself, Diane Lees.
Hello, welcome to the March 21st spring edition of The Outspoken Cyclist. Yes, indeed, I'm your host, Diane Lees, along with Tim McKenna.
Hi, Diane.
Hi, Tim. Is it spring yet?
You said last week or the week before that it's spring, so damn it, it's spring.
Yeah. Okay, but the weather is?
39 degrees out.
Well, it's the northeast kind of spring. So the map I saw this week that was showing it's going to be warmer in the west, and it's going to warm up nicely in the southwest, and it's getting warm in the south. In the Great Lakes, it says never. It's all blue, dark blue. It's really kind of sad. So let's move on to the show, shall we?
Yes.
Okay. This week's show is a wrap-up of the 2014 National Bike Summit. We'll hear from three people who either attended the summit or participated in it in one capacity or another. Our fourth guest was to be Congressman Earl Blumenauer of Oregon. He lost his voice. They're looking for it. He can't be with us this week, but his office has promised that they will reschedule soon, and tentatively we're set for next week. So I want to preface this show with a bit of personal perspective and background from my four decades of involvement in the bike industry. When I rewind back to 1980 or 1990 or even the year 2000, bicycle advocacy was happening in the corners of the room or under the tables. Never would I have imagined the progress that we've made in such a short period of time. And yet, the more progress we make, the more we want. And not getting the programs or funding or even recognition for the hard work we are doing can result in feeling defeated, sad, and sapped of all that energy it takes to get the work done. Some of those feelings come from living in a society that now has expectations of instantaneous results. News travels over the interwebs almost before it happens, and the old guard still clutches its reins tightly so as not to fade into oblivion as a new, more energetic generation stamps its feet in impatience. What we're seeing today will seem like baby steps in the blink of an eye, and yet we are making progress. So we will talk with Kansas bike dealer, bike advocate, and consummate businessman Jeff Koenig about his bike experiences at this year's summit, which is his fourth. Jeff chaired an important breakout session on the bike dealer and advocacy, and of course I'm interested in what he has to say. We have spoken with Jody Zoranin in the past. She is with the Consider Biking Advocacy Group in Columbus, Ohio, and has a very different perspective on what is happening with moving projects forward and what the Bike Summit represented to her. Finally, we're going to talk with the president of Bike Cleveland, Jacob Van Sickle. And I wanted to talk with Jacob not just because he's here in Cleveland, but because he represents one of the newer advocacy groups that are having a positive and important impact on a city that has been struggling for a long, long time. Tim and I will squeeze in a bit of news. So without further delay, let me welcome Jeff Koenig to The Outspoken Cyclist. Good evening, Jeff. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me, Diane. It's good to be with you and your listeners.
Well, I want to get your perspective on this year's Bike Summit. Not only as a bike dealer, but as someone who sort of came to the bike business from another industry and has really brought a lot of interesting perspective to it. Tell me about your take on the summit this year as a whole. This was not your first summit.
No, it's not. It was my fourth, and I'm committed to engaging elected officials in any industry I work for, because one voice who speaks up is worth 10,000 voices who don't. And the summit this year had its value as the most recognizable annual event that I know of that concentrates those voices for the bike ped movement. That said, I've attended more energetic summits than this one.
It seemed like numbers might be down a little bit this year. Is that true?
Yeah, they were, and it was noticeable. I think that bike advocates certainly cannot be said to come from money. And because those who attend depend on local funds to get themselves there, whether their own money or that of their local nonprofits, and because there's nothing cheap about spending a few days in D.C., those who do attend are looking for results that justify the investment. And the last few years have been very trying with our asks of Congress, and we don't have a lot legislative success to hang our hats on.
That said, what do you think might be a better way to be effective lobbying for cycling and pedestrian objectives?
Well, I mean, there's no doubt in my mind that engaging with Washington in person can be effective. I've been a part of that process throughout my career, and if it didn't work, there wouldn't be tens of thousands of meetings every year, you know, with folks representing all kinds of different special interests. The summit is a great format, but the devil is in the implementation, and I think that we need to make our asks more effective and do a better job of preparing attendees to make those asks persuasively.
So what were the asks this year?
Well, this year there are 2.5 bills, I call it, 3 in the House and 2 in the Senate, and I didn't keep those at hand, but they were fairly minor bills, looking for some co-sponsorship on some initiatives. One had to do with trying to make sure that out of a bucket of funding, a quarter of it was earmarked for giving access to working-class folks, access to jobs. And, you know, some things similar to that, adjustments basically to the overall transportation infrastructure.
While you were there, did you get a sense that Congress was listening? I don't know how many people you called on from your delegation, but did you get a sense that people realized, and they usually do, that the bike people are up on the Hill, they're wearing their little pins, blah, 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 blah. And I know that Washington had weather. Bad weather.
Yeah.
So that probably made for less, you know, good results, if you want to call it that. But what was your reaction? What did you get from your legislators?
Well, I think that the summit has branded itself well, and some of our legislative staffs look forward to seeing us because they find us friendly and easy to talk to. We've built some good relationships there, but I come from a state with a very conservative delegation, and so you know, the bicycle lobby has not tended to be where they have concentrated their efforts. They're very much focused on things like the budget and trying to get expenses down, trying to solve what's really the budget crisis considered by many. So it's hard to go and ask for new funds. You know, it's hard to go and ask for money. And so we have to find more clever asks that support what we want in the end, but in ways that put ourselves in their shoes that they can relate to.
Do you think approaching it from the bicycling creates jobs, like bike paths and bike lanes and the things that we know will bring economic success to downtowns by slowing down traffic and complete streets, do they hear that those messages as being positive and both saving some money at the same time that they're creating jobs?
I think they do understand that. I think, though, we also have to keep in mind that, you know, each one of those legislative staffers is meeting with 20 or more people every week, and they all say that investing in their initiative is going to help tax revenues and
sure.
help benefits. And, you know, everybody makes that claim, and so it tends to just kind of be washed in a sea of everybody making the same claim. Somehow we have to be distinct. We have to stand out.
Well, we could all wear Lycra, I guess, up on that would make us stand out. I'm speaking with Jeff Koenig. He is the owner of Big Poppy Bicycles in Kansas. How's Kansas?
Warming, finally.
Yeah.
We're in the 60s, I think.
Ooh, jealous. So let's talk a little bit about your breakout session, Dealers Best Practices for Advocacy. Tell us a bit about the various ideas that came up during the session and how you handled that session as the moderator.
The resounding message from my fellow bike shop owners and I was that without a strong, healthy network of specialty bicycle shops across the country, advocacy is really dead in the water. Bike advocacy has shifted its alignment with the business of cycling too far over to big box and online retailers of equipment, and that's commoditizing the bicycle and reducing ridership long term, which will ultimately shoot advocacy in the foot. Advocates need to focus on working with the specialty shops again if they're serious about long-term success, and that means that advocates need to come alongside shops and assist them with advocacy efforts rather than just expecting shops to come alongside them with discounts just because they're advocates.
So give me an example of what might happen in Kansas, your shop, if an advocacy organization were to come to you. They're looking to say, give our members discounts as opposed to how can we help, you know, working together? That's That's interesting.
Yeah, too often, unfortunately, that has been the case. In fact, at my part of the dealer panel presentation, I told the story of attempting to set up a local community club that in the end we did not want to own. We didn't want to control their agenda. We just wanted to help facilitate focusing cyclists and helping them form a club for themselves. And as we went through that process with them, we really tried to instill one thing that we really wanted to see out of the club, which was service to the community, really getting involved in local advocacy and being a good example to voters so that voters would support them when cycling initiatives come up. And as soon as we let them go and we took our hands off, it wasn't very long before, you know, their elected leaders came in, and the only thing that they were interested in was a couple of social rides and getting discounts from the club. They never went into doing any of those service projects that we tried to give them as good first ideas.
Interesting. That's very interesting. Do you have a complete streets or safe routes to school program in your area?
We're working on it. I like to call Kansas a great opportunity because we're a developing market. You know, the market next door, Junction City, has 4 safe routes to school projects. We have the first couple of grant requests being made by our city now. So we're at the front edge of it, but we are in the process.
Why do you think that people look at bike shops the way they do right now? And you know, when I look at the advocacy groups in the Cleveland area, we were never approached. Now, I'm not in that business right now, but we were never approached by, you know, the advocacy people asking for our help. And I don't even really remember being approached for discounts. We were pretty much ignored.
You know, I think that this isn't, and this will rely on some of my experience in other industries, I don't think this is in any way unique to the bicycle business. I think that we've had a culture, a generation that has grown up believing that a business owner just automatically, by virtue of the fact that they own a small business, must make lots of money, have lots of time, and doesn't give back to the community, when in reality, anybody that goes into small business these days knows they're some of the hardest working, lowest paid workers in America. And so I think that assumption just, you know, carried around by the non-business owning consumer public just assumes we've got a lot more to give than we really have.
And not only in money, but in time. Mm-hmm. You know, people don't understand how much time bike shop owners spend in their stores and at home working in the business.
That's right. Just trying to survive.
Exactly. So let's just take a sort of a long view. If you could change something at the summit or add something to it, what would you do differently there? What would you add or change?
Well, the summit does a great job with organizing the process of engaging Congress. And I think what it really needs are some more clever legislative strategies that recognize Congress's budget challenge and aligns with legislators' current priorities of the day. In addition, the summit needs to take stock of how it too often categorizes and divides the conversation between red states and blue states, and between social responsibility and fiscal responsibility. Intentionally or not, more likely not, they have been dividing people rather than uniting them. And we have been known to pitch that bicycles are supposed to be bike partisan.
Interesting. Very interesting. Is there something you think the bicycle industry as a whole could do? Now, People for Bikes is doing a lot of stuff. What else is going on in that regard? Where do you think that the bicycle industry, not necessarily just the dealer, but manufacturers, and as a whole, you also have the racing community and the, you know, the touring community. You have a lot of factors in our business. Mm-hmm. What could they do better to support advocacy than we do?
Well, you know, that's a tough question. I mean, I think that the industry is struggling right now with survival. And if bike shops can return to being a growth business that isn't frowned upon by consumers for making a profit, then the industry is going to have more to give back, and I think it should. Neighborhood bike shops are the universal focal point and concentrator of cycling enthusiasts, and they have constant contact with the riding community. So, you know, I guess the honest truth is that more advocacy isn't going to necessarily save bike shops, but more successful bike shops will fuel more cycling advocacy. I think we need a response from our consuming public again. I think we need them to return to us so that we can focus more resources and energy on what's matters, what's important to them.
Well, those are all interesting and good points. And, you know, I certainly have no argument with any of it. And I have to be very honest and say I don't miss that day-to-day retail anymore. Mm-hmm. I did for the first few months, but now this is sort of my love life right here behind this microphone, and I love it. Well, Jeff, thank you so much for your insight. It's very clear, it's very concise, and it's very good. I appreciate you taking time to talk with me.
Well, thanks for having me on the program, and I'll be happy to come back if you'll have me.
And I think we will. All right. You have a great cycling season, and keep the rubber side down.
Very good.
All right.
Have a great spring.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Jeff Koenig joined me from his shop in Kansas. He's an interesting guy, has a lot of good insight. What'd you think?
I like that it's a different perspective than I'm used to sitting here just listening from the cycling side. He's absolutely 100% right. With small business, everything needs to come from there. And it's interesting how people won't support a small business as much as they probably should in the cycle business. They'll go out and spend $6 for a cup of coffee. But, you know,
they won't spend $6 for an inner tube.
Exactly. They'll go to a big box store, or they'll find somewhere online that they can do that quickly in the other. And it actually benefits the cyclist when they go to the local cycle shop. I believe he's 100% right that you get a lot more advocacy from the local cycle shop working it that way out.
It remains to be seen. He's a very popular voice among bike dealers, and he has a lot of very interesting and good things to say. He also has a lot of experience. He comes from another industry, and he was very successful in that, and I'm sure he's very successful in Kansas. You are listening to The Outspoken Cyclist, and we're going to head down to Columbus, Ohio, and talk with Consider Biking's Jody Zoranin. Hi, Jody. Welcome back to The Outspoken Cyclist. It's great to talk with you.
Hi, Diane. Thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
I want to talk to you a little bit about the Bike Summit itself and perhaps what's going on with advocacy in your mind. I mean, how you are dealing with advocacy right now, because I know your projects are not necessarily coming to fruition in the time and the way you might want them to. That said, tell me about the attendance at the summit by women. Were there more women there this year?
Well, I did see that the league posted that they had 450 women at the bicycling forum, so that's definitely more than last year. I think it was in maybe just over 200 last year, so that's nice to see.
Was there a better spillover to the basics, to the regular bike summit? I know last year they said a lot of women came to the women's summit in the morning and then did not show up at the full bike summit.
Well, and I will say yes, but, you know, since I wasn't at the Women's Summit, it was really hard for me to compare. Do you
right.
see what I'm saying?
Sure.
So, yes. Actually, I mean, having many people, you know, their flights were canceled and there was, you know, lots of snow between the Midwest and the East. So to have the summit room so full was a show that, you know, people into biking don't let weather keep them from their commitments. So it was wonderful. Maybe the federal government was closed that day, but we had bicycle advocates in the room. So.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's awesome. So let's talk a little bit about what went on at the summit. I know that the new Secretary of Transportation, Anthony Fox, was there. Tell us a little bit about what you found inspiring at the opening plenary.
Well, and it was kind of, I guess, a tie, or maybe they dovetailed well, but we heard from the new mayor of Pittsburgh, William Peduto, I think.
Okay.
Peduto. And he was just elected in November and, you know, inaugurated in January. So Bike Pittsburgh was instrumental in him being elected because they did take a focus on, you know, what are these mayoral candidates' views on bicycling and pedestrian issues. So, you know, big applause for Bike Pittsburgh for, you know, taking it to the next level, that you are actually, you know, helping to influence the vote. And Scott Bricker did a breakout on that as well, and I was very impressed. They Bike Pittsburgh is definitely a model advocacy and city.
Yeah,
and
they are. We've been watching Bike Pittsburgh up here in Cleveland too. They're doing just some amazing things, and they always seem to beat us in the National Bike Challenge too, as well as on the football field. So, you know, it is Pittsburgh. What else did you? Who else impressed you?
Well, and so there was kind of a follow-up from last year where Doug Meyer, a researcher, last year he led a research project where they went and talked to members of Congress and their legislative assistants and or aides and asked them, the opinion of the bicycling advocacy community. So this year, to build on that, they went out to municipal mayors. So 40 mayors across the U.S. of various sizes, and it would probably trended towards cities that have received bicycle-friendly designation, although they had a few that were, you know, working on it. But that information, and Columbus was included in there. So all of the data was, you know, generalized and masked for the audience. But there were certainly some things shared where if they didn't come from, you know, from the Columbus leadership, they, you know, it was similar to what I perceive is the message being sent to us, which I'll just say is, they want advocates to work with them. They say, you know, hey, we feel like we're doing things for you, and then you go to the newspaper and bash us. So, that was, and then I left that session and soon got a call from a reporter afterward about a project that was being pushed till a later year. So I really tried to be as positive as possible in my response.
I'm speaking with Jody Zuranin from Consider Biking in Columbus, Ohio. What an interesting perspective. We're going to move away from the summit a second because I like this conversation about advocacy and cities and communities and the idea that so many different voices are coming into a mayor or the mayor, whoever is working on that either complete streets or safe routes to school or different paths or different bike lanes, and they're getting mixed messages. What could fix that, Jody? What do you think would be a better way to approach the city?
Well, and, you know, my personal opinion is that, we were a candidate for the Green Lanes Project, and we were not chosen, so I'm kind of heartbroken. But to me, as a bike advocate, it is hard to defend a door zone bike lane or share roads that put people in a dangerous position. So I certainly agree with the advocates that say bad bike infrastructure is no help, and it's worse than no bike infrastructure. And so I certainly agree with that. So what I felt, you know, the Green Lanes really, it's taken, and you had a wonderful interview on that a couple weeks ago, but, it's showing that this can be done in U.S. cities, and, you know, Chicago is a great example that they did it at a system level, and when you can create it as a interconnecting infrastructure, then people are using it, and the motorists get used to where to expect bikes, and I think, you know, it's making a dramatic difference in those cities. So what can be done for, you know, as bike advocates? I guess trying to gather some consensus about, you know, what we're asking for and try to have a coherent message. Another thing is having members of that community speaking up for a project. I know, you know, Cleveland has been highly involved in this lately, that when there's a, you know, an improvement project in a certain part of town, that they get people, you know, that are going to be using that infrastructure at the public meetings and to have the input.
It's true. And we're going to be talking with Jacob Van Sickle a little later on in the show. And that is true. What I'm kind of hearing about what's going on is projects got lost in Columbus, that there are certain projects like the Green Lane project. That's not the only one, though. You've got a lot of things going on down there.
Well, thank you. And you know what? I've been in this position almost 4 years. So at the beginning of my tenure, we unveiled the first Sharrow on High Street. And, you know, that was definitely, a win and something to celebrate. And then, my biggest excitement during the time here is the bike share. I mean, Columbus, and I mentioned, the cities, there were 40 cities, and 15 of the 40 interviewed for that research had bike share. And the ones that didn't have it want it, and the ones that do have it, want it to be expanded. So I really feel like that is a game changer for Columbus. And it's exciting.
So let me just ask one last question. What do you think the most important takeaway was from this year's Bike Summit for you?
Well, and it all relates to the transportation bill. You know, that right now I think we're expecting that the MAP 21 is going to be reauthorized this summer or fall. And, on the one hand, it was a big win that we had bike and pedestrian and trails projects included in the last bill, but the overall funding levels had dropped. So we would like to see certainly those, maintained and increased. And that's, I think the league did a great job of talking to us about the different initiatives to, talk to our representatives and senators. And we hope to see some new creative projects or initiatives coming out of the next transportation bill, but we need to continue to have our voices heard and remind the federal lawmakers that funding for, all transportation users. This is not just asphalt and highways.
And I totally agree. What was your reception like from your legislators? Who did you see? I know you probably saw Senator Brown. Did you see Senator Portman?
Well, and, the lobby day has moved from Thursday to Wednesday. So we used to go to Senator Brown's constituent coffee. Now we go to Senator Portman's.
Uh-huh.
And it was great. We his senior transportation aide, Nick Butterfield, was gracious and spoke with us. And, we chatted about the challenges of funding the transportation bill with the gas tax, that it's only 50% of what's needed. So this is my fourth year at the summit, and I've been doing the scheduling. And so, early on, it was hard to even get a call back. And now I feel like our reception was warm, and we got Senator Portman to wear the pin and got
Atta
our photo taken with him. So, I feel, it's looking for common ground, and that was good. And also, Chuck Smith visited with Speaker Boehner's office, and they're inviting him to an opening of a trail connection between Troy and Piqua. So I think the more that we can do to, make our legislators aware of these projects that benefit their constituents, then, we're doing our jobs and helping them see that this isn't just, a line item, that this is actual, projects that create to the livability of their district.
Well, Jody, thank you so much for talking with me. It's always a pleasure. I can't wait to see you guys in May, and keep up the good work. You guys are doing great down there.
Oh, Diane, thank you. Well, I rode with the Cleveland folks, so I got to see the Cleveland Hostel and the trailhead there at Harvard Road, and and the Rays Mountain Bike Park. So
lots of cool things are
going
to be happening
Cleveland,
up here this year.
Great job. Great job to
thanks.
You all.
Thanks. So. All right. Well, you have
thanks,
a great
Diane.
Night. All right,
we'll
Jody.
Chat soon. Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye-bye. Jody Zuranin joined me from Consider Biking in Columbus, Ohio. We're going to take a break on The Outspoken Cyclist. We will be right back with some news, and then we'll head on over to the west side of Cleveland and talk with Bike Cleveland President Jacob Van Sickle. You're listening to The Outspoken Cyclist on WJCU.
WJCU, University Heights.
On Saturday, April 12th, the International Women's Air and Space Museum, IWASM, will host their annual Family Day from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. This year's focus is on Jerry Mock, who became the first woman to fly around the world solo 50 years ago. This free public event includes games, crafts, snacks, a photo booth, and more. It all takes place at the International Women's Air and Space Museum, located in the main terminal of Burke Lakefront Airport. More information about this event at IWASM.org.
We are back on The Outspoken Cyclist. I'm Diane Lees.
And I'm Tim McKenna.
And we're going to do some news. What's your first item of news, Mr. McKenna?
First has to do with bike sharing systems coming to Topeka. This is from the WIBW.com website. Topeka Metro Transit Authority board members unanimously approved the purchase of 50 bicycles for $167,000 from Social Bicycles to use in their bike share program.
From whom?
This is from Social Bicycles, and they're based out of New York, and they chose Social Bicycles because they have inexpensive docking stations and great GPS technology that goes with that.
Wow. So this is different from what some of the other bike shares are using, I think.
Yeah, it's a little bit different.
So. Okay. Well, that's cool. Kansas is coming online. I hope Cleveland comes online soon. So, you know, we've been talking a lot about the bike summit, and the new Secretary of Transportation, Anthony Fox, gave a nice, you know, pep talk to the delegates at the summit this year. We've also been talking a lot about bicyclist and pedestrian deaths over the last few weeks.
It seems like we've seen too many.
So this came out of Bicycle Retailer this week. U.S. Transportation Secretary Anthony Fox said Tuesday that he will not tolerate an increase in bicyclist and pedestrian deaths. Fox said he had experience with bike transportation issues as the mayor of Charlotte, North Carolina, prior to becoming transportation secretary less than a year ago. Quote, when I was the mayor, I helped oversee the development of complete streets in the city of Charlotte, and I also saw an uptick in bicyclist and pedestrian deaths occurring in our city. I didn't tolerate it as a mayor, and as U.S. Secretary of Transportation, we certainly won't stand still and allow this crisis to slowly build up over time. Our roads should be safe. They should be easy places to travel, no matter how we're traveling on them. The article goes on to say some other things, but as you remember, we had an item last week about the Department of Transportation. Actually, when they came out with their statement, didn't include anything about bicyclists and pedestrian deaths. So we'll just have to see where that goes. It would be nice to see something else happen with it. And there is a Transportation Department 2015 budget PDF is available. It does include $122 million for highway safety research and analysis, which includes support of federal, state, and local activities related to pedestrian and bicycle safety. That program, however, is the only reference to bicycling in the highlights of the document. So you can go to DOT.gov, maybe, if you're interested in seeing the secretary's budget highlights.
I believe it was last week we talked about cargo bikes.
We did indeed, and with Mike Cobb.
Yes. This is, sort of a similar program, and this is from the Oxford Mail website in the UK. This is the St. John Ambulance Cycle Responders. They actually use bicycles as a responder instead of an ambulance, or ahead of an ambulance, more importantly. They currently have 9 volunteers. They're looking for more volunteers. But there are a lot of situations where they can actually get to someone 3 to 4 minutes before an ambulance can. If you have lots of traffic, you have conditions that don't allow a vehicle to get there, the cycle responders can get there much more quickly. And the neat thing is, everyone that works with this, they have to go through a test. And that kind of is what reminded me of the cargo bikes, the course that they had to go through in order to train for that. And this is very similar to it. And I think it's another great use of bicycles.
Yeah, it does sound that way.
I always like to find somewhere where people have the opportunity to go vote or choose something. 10best.com.
Oh, okay.
Which is affiliated with USA Today Travel. You have the opportunity until April 14th at noon to vote for your favorite cycling city. They actually worked with George Hincapie. And they've narrowed it down, or they've actually nominated 20 separate cities. And what they're looking for is cities that have conducive weather, generating great buzz about cycling, and places that attract cyclists on a permanent basis. So there's a lot of neat cities in there. So maybe your city is in there. We'll go ahead and follow up after April, and we'll see who the winning city is.
And where can they go if they're interested?
They can go to 10best.com.
That's pretty cool, actually.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. I'm sure Cleveland is not one of them, because if weather has anything to do with it,
I think Ohio, based on the people that we talk to in the show, I think we have enough advocate working for Ohio that we'll be there soon.
That would be nice, wouldn't it? All right. What do you know about Barry Bonds and cycling?
I don't know anything about that.
Well, Barry Bonds is not only an avid cyclist, he's a cycling investor.
That's good to hear.
It is good. This comes from the San Francisco Gate. It was written by Ann Killian. She will be posting another column about Barry Bonds' return to the Giants. But this is something she said she didn't include in that column, and she wanted to bring it to our attention. Bonds has become an avid cyclist. It's surely not the only reason he is so much skinnier than he was back in 2007, but it probably helps his fitness. And yes, there's plenty of fodder there about a baseball player tainted by steroid use adopting the most drug-infested sport of all. Bonds reportedly got into cycling through his girlfriend, Mary Holden, a former world champion and Olympian. He has ridden in Levi Leipheimer's Gran Fondo and other events. Leipheimer, a former Lance Armstrong lieutenant who lives in Santa Rosa, was banned from cycling for drug involvement. "I only do it for myself to stay in shape," Bonds said. "I'm not good, but I get gratification for me. I compete with myself. Cycling is a way to stay fit without pounding on his body. I've had a trillion knee surgeries, back surgery, hip surgery," Bonds said. "It's allowed me not to beat my body up." Cycling has helped Bonds. Bonds is giving back to cycling. He is a financial sponsor of a women's professional team called 2016. Holden is the team's sports director. "The women's side doesn't get the attention," Bonds said. "I thought we should be down with this because they're very talented." Bonds, who recently moved to San Francisco, will be joining the hordes of Bay Area cyclists out on the roads. "You might spot him riding up Mount Tam, though," he says. "Climbing isn't his forte. I'm slow because I'm a big guy," he said. "I get dropped, but I get him on the downhills." Big surprise. Mary Holden, by the way, will be on the show to talk about her team, 2016, in the not-too-distant future. It's just crazy right now. They're just getting the team up and running for the season. What you got?
Last one that I have is more good news for London. They're giving a massive push to cycling, and they have $1 million fund. Actually, it's £1 million fund to create what they're calling the Mini Holland Revolution. They're going to take three separate areas and try and turn them all into a Mini Holland. Since cycling on London's main roads has risen by 173% since 2001, and the government has now announced plans to double the numbers in the next decade.
Really?
So what they're also trying to do in part of this article is they're going to get some of the cyclists off of the main roads. And I think that's a big safety issue to keep them away from the lorries and everything else. And that will allow them to make more bike-specific routes involved. But £100 million will go a long way.
Sounds like a lot of money. So we got to talk about the video of the week before I give you my last item here. So it's a 60-second spot, and it is of a drop-dead gorgeous guy wearing a helmet and shoes and nothing else.
Nothing else?
Nothing else. And this British over voice, you know, this beautiful British voice that's telling you about what's going to happen when you look in your mirror, and you're going to want to look in your mirror more often, and you're going to want, I mean, it is just awesome. And the whole point is watch for cyclists. But it's such a cool video. It is on grist.org if you're interested. It's grist.org/list/cycling-naked-video. I'm telling you, it is cool. I enjoyed it.
I think it's a great marketing plan, and
It would never play in this country.
Probably not. But it's not really offensive, but it's not.
No, I don't think so.
It gets your attention, and it really makes the point.
Yes, it does. And it's true that not a lot of men have told me they like it, but a lot of women have told me they like it. This guy is really handsome. He's adorable. So my last item is from Grist also. It is written by a guy named John Upton, And I think it's kind of a cool story. Paris bans cars, makes transit free to fight air pollution. So evidently, the pollution in Paris is pretty awful. Air pollution is about as romantic as wilted flowers, John Upton says. Chapped lips and corked wine. So the record-setting smog that has settled over the city of love in the past few days is definitely dampening the mood. Unseasonably warm weather has triggered unprecedented air pollution levels in Paris. Over the weekend, the city responded by offering free public transportation and bike sharing. Similar measures were taken throughout nearby Belgium, which also reduced speed limits. But that wasn't enough to fix the problem. So Paris and 22 surrounding areas are taking more extreme steps, banning nearly half of the vehicles from their roads. Electric vehicles and hybrids are exempted, as will any cars carrying at least three people. About 700 police officers will be stationed at checkpoints, handing out $31 or 22 euro fines to violators. Agence France-Presse reports that Paris has tried the approach before. Ecology Minister Philippe Martin said he understood the difficulties and irritation and even anger over the move, adding, "But we just had to take this decision." Martin said similar measures in 1997 had yielded results, adding that he hoped that the number of vehicles on the roads would be significantly lower on Monday without giving a figure. Trains and buses will remain free while the car restrictions are in place, giving Parisians yet more public places where they can nuzzle and talk excitedly about government policies until the ugly smog burns. So on that note, that's pretty much the end of the news for the week. What do you think?
Well, maybe we should just do that all the time, whether there's smog or no smog.
Well, I have friends who are in Paris right now, too. I wonder, I'll be interested to hear what they had to say when they get back. They're there for spring break.
I don't hear about it that often that there's a smog problem in Paris, but obviously.
Well, 1997, so it's been a few years if this is the first time they've come back to banning or, you know, either doing the even odds or actually banning cars. I think it's an awesome idea. I think that it would be nice to take transportation and just let people walk. I mean, what else do you need to do? It's Paris, for heaven's sakes. Paris in the spring, tra-la. All right. We are going to head on over to downtown Cleveland. We're going to talk with Jacob Van Sickle. He is the president of Bike Cleveland. Jacob, thanks for joining me on the show this evening.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Bike Cleveland has come a long way in a couple of years, huh?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's great to see where we've been and where we're headed. And, you know, it's only good things from here, you know.
I hope so. Well, I want to talk with you about the Bike Summit and then about a couple of things that have sort of happened since we've scheduled this conversation that don't pertain to the Bike Summit, but that do pertain to cycling that I think some people will be interested in. You're the head of Bike Cleveland. What did you want to focus on for our organization at this year's summit?
Yeah, you know, for us, it's really about, you know, the advocacy day on the Hill and talking with, you know, our decision makers at the Capitol and getting to them, you know, the biggest concerns that we have. And you know, the ones that we focused on are really ensuring in the new transportation bill that's going to be, you know, being discussed over the next few months is that, you know, at the highest level, we can have as much local control of funds so that we can make sure we're building the types of bike facilities and the type of environments that make bicycling safe and stress-free that we know we need to have in the greater Cleveland region. We also talked about, you know, complete streets. You know, the city of Cleveland has done a great job in passing a complete and green streets ordinance. But, you know, within a new transportation bill, what can we do to make sure that, you know, those types of ordinances can be implemented effectively into the true spirit, you know, so that we're having, you know, streets that are safe for people of all ages and abilities to ride bikes.
Let's talk for a second about the conversation that you may be having with the city and how that relationship works or doesn't work. When I talked to Jody down in Columbus a little while ago, she was telling me that maybe these mayors are getting mixed messages, that some advocates say they want this and some advocates say they want that, and that Cleveland, interestingly enough, was doing some really good things. Tell me how you're working those things out to get the kinds of programs that Bike Cleveland wants into, you know, having them actually happen.
Yeah, I mean, you know, for us, it's really about, you know, being a new organization, and you know, we're just 2 years old. It was, when we formed, it was really about what can we do to create the largest movement for bicycling, you know, a unified movement that got everybody on the same page. And I think, you know, we've done a great job at it in terms of, you know, gaining members, you know, gaining their respect of the media, and to a large extent, gaining their respect of governmental institutions. You know, I would add the caveat to that, and, you know, being an advocacy organization, there are times where, you know, when you're pushing a city to do something that, you know, they may be a little bit resistant to do, there's going to be, you know, some postcards sent or some petitions mailed. But to a large extent, it's been a very cordial relationship. We've been really lucky over the past, and you know, even 3 months, the city recently released their capital improvement plan, and within it, they've allocated a good chunk of money to actually implement their Complete Green Streets ordinance. So actually resurfacing and repaving streets that will actually get bike facilities. So for us, now we're at the point where we just want to make sure we're monitoring that. And as we go to public meetings, we're communicating to the public the benefits of these types of facilities in terms of safety, in terms of economic development, in terms of just building a healthy city. So that's kind of where we are right now with the city. We're also working with the city on in the Cleveland Metropolitan School District. We just submitted an application with the city to ODOT and NOAACA to do a district-wide safe routes to school travel plan.
Interesting.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, it's something new ODOT started doing recently, seeing that a lot of urban districts weren't necessarily applying for safe routes to school funding because they didn't have the resources to do a school travel plan. You know, in the past, they did it 4 schools at a time. With this new model, we're able to do 70 schools at a time.
So how does that work?
So the way that it works is, we filled out an application with the city, submitted it to ODOT and NOAACA. We'll find out in May if it's funded, and then when it's funded, we'll pull together a steering committee of people from the school district to safety forces to engineers to planners to really look at areas around all 70 schools, all 70 K-8 schools in the CMSD district to identify, you know, what are the problem areas, what are the barriers to kids biking and walking to school in these areas, and what can we do to improve them, both through infrastructure and through programming.
What would that kind of programming cost? What kind of money was in that application?
Yeah, so it's the application was for $100,000 to ODOT and $80,000 to NOAACA, and then we're working with the city on identifying a $20,000 match. So the whole plan itself cost $200,000. The really exciting part of it is once the plan is complete, it gives Cleveland the ability to apply every year to transportation alternatives programs, so federal dollars, to actually implement the plan. So this isn't one of those plans that would necessarily just sit on a shelf and collect dust and we get warm fuzzies when it's complete. But we actually have, once it's complete, the ability to apply for implementation money to actually put the plan in place and actually make the streets safer instead of talking about it.
Many listeners don't know about NOAACA, and it's a very interesting organization. I don't know how many other cities have it. I know it is the Northern Ohio Area Coordinating Agency, but explain what that means.
Yeah, so NOAACA is a Northeast Ohio Area-Wide Coordinating Agency, and they are the region-wide planning arm for the 5-county region of Northeast Ohio. And also in terms of planning, they also do, you know, distribute all transportation enhancement, transportation alternatives dollars for projects to be funded in those 5 counties.
I'm speaking with Jacob Van Sickle. He is the president of Bike Cleveland, our Cleveland advocacy organization, which has come a long way since the meetings I attended 2 years ago. It's unbelievable. So let's go back to the summit for just a moment, if you would. Secretary of Transportation Anthony Fox gave a talk. How do you think his department is addressing the needs of cyclists and pedestrians? And I don't want to compare him to Ray LaHood because he's a whole different person, and he comes from being the mayor of a big city. So how did you receive his conversation, and do you think he's open to cycling and pedestrian issues?
Yeah, and I know you said you didn't want to compare him to Ray LaHood, but I will start by saying I think he is a great predecessor to Ray LaHood.
Successor.
Successor, yeah, to Ray LaHood based on his conversation at the National Bike Summit.
Oh, good. Okay.
And, Yeah, and I think, Justin, in terms of the things that he did when he was mayor of Charlotte, North Carolina, you know, he really brought some great programs in terms of multimodal transportation within public transit and increasing funding and planning for bicycle and walking projects. So I think as long as he's willing to bring that to FHWA, similar to Ray LaHood, and I think based on his discussion at the Bike Summit, he will. I think we have another great advocate in the Department of Transportation.
That would be really, really nice. I would like that a lot. I also wanted to ask you which breakout sessions you attended and what you got out of them at the summit.
Yeah, so luckily we had a really good contingent of people from Cleveland that were at the summit. So we actually broke them off into which ones we attended, and then we talked in between and afterwards about what we learned. But the ones I specifically attended were focused on, you know, some of the issues I know we're having in Cleveland. So I actually went to two of them on enforcement and related to police, and one on how do you really respond to a lot of those complaints that you get from just the general public about scofflaw cyclists, cyclists breaking the laws, not following the rules of the road. And, for me, they were very helpful. We're actually in the process of implementing an enforcement training program for police officers focused around bicycle and pedestrian safety. So, you know, the info that was gathered will be helpful as we begin to implement that program in April and moving forward. So.
What kind of suggestions were given about making cyclists a little more responsible and on purpose on the road instead of running stop signs and doing the things they do? What kinds of things were you able to bring back that we might be able to implement?
Yeah, and I think a lot of it, at least based on the breakout session, it focused on really just educating, cyclists and motorists on cyclists' right to the road. And I know, I mean, I follow all the rules of the road when I ride my bike, ride on the right side of the road, use all the hand signals, give enough notice when I'm turning, those types of things. But communicating to the motoring public and the cyclist, you know, what are those rules? I know it, even though I follow all the rules of the road, I still often get yelled at by motorists to, you know, ride on the sidewalk or, you know, get out of my way. So it's really, you know, noting to just the general public, you know, be it through marketing campaigns, you know, that we're really in this together. We're really just trying to get to where we need to go, be it you may be in a car and I'm on a bike, but we're really just trying to get where we want to go. So that's really what they focused on is, you know, how can you really communicate those things?
Well, we'll be watching for some of the things. I know that some cities are using billboards. I know that I don't know how effective they are, but I think Pittsburgh was using a billboard campaign or some
sort. We launched a billboard campaign last year. We did 13 billboards in the Cleveland area with a campaign that we've branded Ride Together. We worked with Dixon Eaton to develop
a brand around it. I remember you actually won that. That was a grant or something, a contest, and you won.
Yeah, it's part of Dixon Eaton 60 for 60 campaign. We got the most likes in a photo on Facebook, and they provided some really great in-kind services to develop this campaign called Ride Together, which is really hits on what I was talking about before. And, you know, we're really just people on bikes. We're not monsters. We're just really trying to get where we want to go, and we're maybe more sustainably minded, maybe more healthful minded. But in the end, we're trying to get to work. We're trying to get to school. We're trying to get to wherever we need to be. So, yeah, we did some radio PSAs. We did some billboards. We have a couple bus wraps out right now. We're going to be relaunching it again in the spring. And we're also publishing a guide that we worked with two local people, Justin Glanville and Julia Kuo, called the Biking in Cleveland Guide. Yes, it's meant to educate, you know, kind of people that are new to biking or maybe want to get interested in, you know, try biking to work or try biking to school or try biking to the grocery store, giving them the basic knowledge that they need to know to do that, you know, how to pick the right bike, how to pack a bag, how to pick the right route, those types of things. So we're going to actually be publishing that in time for Bike Month in May.
How much increase have you seen in people riding their bikes in Cleveland since you took this position with Bike Cleveland?
Yeah, I would say statistically, we've seen quite a bit based on counts from NOACA bike counts on some of the bike facilities and on just regular streets that they count people on bikes and pedestrians on. But I would say just by being out there and seeing more people on bikes coming out to our events, Bike to Work Day events or our socials, it's a growing number of people for sure. I would say just alone over the past year, our membership has grown pretty considerably. So There's definitely more people interested in biking, interested in finding the appropriate ways to you know, outfit themselves so they can do it for work or for recreation. And it's been an exciting time for us.
It is exciting. You guys are like all over the place. I'm really very impressed with the Bike Cleveland organization. So the last thing I want to talk about is the announcement that was made this week about the Cleveland Sports Commission's urban cycling event. What can you tell me about it?
Yeah, so we actually have been working with the Sports Commission over the past I think it's been about a year and a half on a plan to launch a large cycling festival called Neo Cycle to take place in Cleveland. And the unique part about it is it's very unique to Cleveland in that it encompasses a wide variety of events, both competitive and social. So there'll be track racing at the Velodrome. There'll be a criterium, there'll be cyclocross, then there'll also be social events. So Bike Cleveland got plugged in because we're working on organizing a large social ride called the Forest City Fundo. It'll take place as part of the larger festival on September 28th. So we're excited to actually be a part of it, and I think it'll really do great work in showcasing a lot of the great cycling amenities we have in Greater Cleveland. I mean, I bet you a lot of people don't know we have a really great cyclocross culture, or we have an inverted velodrome for people to track race on. So that's really the exciting part of it, is we can really showcase the cycling culture we have in Cleveland over this weekend-long festival.
Well, I have to say, Jacob, that you and Bike Cleveland have done a wonderful job of changing the face of cycling in Northeast Ohio. I, for one, have been in this market for a long, long time, as you know, and I am duly impressed with the work you're doing.
Thank you. And I would say anybody that isn't familiar with Bike Cleveland, if they're in the Northeast Ohio area, check us out at bikecleveland.org.
Well, on that note, I think I'm going to let you get back to what you were doing this evening. And thank you so much for joining me on the show. We will talk again.
Great. Thanks, Diane.
All righty. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Jacob Van Sickle, the president of Bike Cleveland, joined me from the Bike Cleveland offices in downtown Cleveland, and I truly am impressed. Just an amazing amount of work that he's done. That is all we have time for on the Outspoken Cyclist this evening. I hope you have time for a ride and that the weather is nice where you are. Have a great week. Talk to you next time. Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us today on The Outspoken Cyclist with Diane Lees. We'll be back next Saturday evening from 5:30 to 6:30 here on WJCU 88.7 FM and streaming live on the internet at WJCU.org. Don't forget, this show is available as a downloadable podcast also at WJCU.org, and we're on Facebook at The Outspoken Cyclist. Thanks again for listening, ride safely, and we'll see you next week.